Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the CalcioLand podcast. So we have probably schedule-wise the most exciting weekend in Serie A, in the sense that all the top teams are basically playing each other. So we're going to preview that today. Since we didn't get to your Twitter questions on Monday because we were pressed for time, today we're going to go through quite a few of those, and we're going to finish the show with an interview with my colleague from the Marzio site, Claudio Perfetto. We're going to chat mainly on Milan's resurgence, but also get his thoughts on a very exciting stretch in Serie A. But before we get to all that good stuff, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. And Alex, what I wanted to ask you today is basically the same thing I've asked our guests in recent weeks. So we have an exciting race for the title in Serie A between Juve and Napoli. And, you know, there's four CL spots, so we're going to give two to those teams. But now we have Milan also making a late run for it. So I would say the top teams, we have Juve, Napoli, Lazio, Inter, Milan, and Roma. Maybe Sampdoria can make a late run, but I see them a step below. So, Alex, I wanted to ask you, out of these six teams, how do you see it shaken out at the end of the season? What, if you had to bet today, what would be your final top four in Serie A?
Well, yeah, I've definitely thought about it each time we've had a guest answer it. And we've been fairly consistent, you and I, that Juventus, despite being in second right now, I think we both still think they'll be first. And David, I'm getting nervous personally about that prediction when I see that they're 4 points down. But of course, Juve has a game in hand after that snow out last weekend. I still think Juventus are going to finish first, but boy, it might come down to that game in April when they both play each other. And, you know, Lazio sitting at third, only a point ahead of Inter. Originally, I was going to say it's going to be, so Juve is going to be my number one. They're going to finish the season number one. Napoli is going to be right behind them at number two. Originally, David, I wanted to say Inter was going to be three because they're only 1 point down. Lazio has been very good, but Inter's been playing with, I mean, sure, they were playing really boring, but they're still right there at four. They've had a little success lately. I thought Inter could squeeze into third, but I looked at their schedule. It's pretty daunting. So I'm going to say it's going to be Lazio, Inter, 3-4. I wanted to say Roma could squeeze in there because they're only a point after Inter, but Roma right now are just being carried by Under, a 20-year-old, and I don't think that that's good enough for them to get into the top four. I just don't see that happening. I think Roma right now aren't getting contributions from enough players. You've talked about it on the podcast. We've seen it all over Twitter. What the hell is going on with Raja Nainggolan? I mean, he's a shell of himself compared to last year. If some player like that was in great form, I would think that Roma could sneak in there. And then, of course, AC Milan right now sitting at seventh, 7 points behind Inter. They're in great form, but I just think that's a lot to make up in not a lot of time. I think there's an outside chance Milan could get in there, but I don't think it's going to happen. So Juventus, Napoli, and then Lazio, Inter stay the same at third and fourth. Mm. That is my prediction. What about you, David?
Wow, Alex, you really took my words out of my mouth. We didn't plan this ahead of time. We rarely, hardly ever do. So I kind of have it the same way. I have a couple of thoughts on it. I'm with you. I feel a little less good about the prediction on Juve because of the fact that, yeah, it's 4 points and they have to make up a game, but it still, I think, psychologically is a factor. I think Napoli does get some help from that, just knowing that Juve has to get two results to keep with them. Granted, that home match against Atalanta should be a somewhat fairly easy result for Juve, but that gives me pause for concern. The other thing is I think this match coming up against Spurs is going to say so much about the season. If Juve gets eliminated, to me at that point, they become overwhelming favorites for the Scudetto. So I need to see that. I think that could completely counter-affect the advantage that Napoli has with this extra match that Juve has to make up. I'm with you. I actually have Lazio and Inter finishing third and fourth. I was really thinking a lot about it. You could talk me into Milan. I need to see what happens in the derby. I think if Milan can somehow win this derby against Inter and get within 4 points, at that point, I think it becomes a very intriguing to see what happens with them. I think Roma's really a little bit in a free fall right now. I think to this match of them going to the San Paolo to play against Napoli could really sink them. You mentioned Under. I think between him and Alisson, those are the only two guys really keeping the team going. And Alisson, I'm confident, will keep it going. I'm not sure if Under can keep performing this way. I also think now that he's played so much now, Serie A coaches are going to have more of a book on him on how to defend him. So I'm very intrigued to see how he adjusts. So we're kind of in agreement on the top four. I just think I could change my mind based on what happens in the derby and what happens in the return leg with Spurs. So very intriguing stretch in Serie A right now.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Even though there's a game in hand for Juventus, it is the psychological aspect of looking that you're down by 4 points. And you know, yeah, everybody's human, so it definitely matters. All right, David, well, you alluded to it. This is going to be a very exciting weekend for Serie A. So let's transition to our game picks.
Excellent. So as usual, like our dear friend in Italy, Thousand Nane, sent me his predictions. We're going to go over the three that he sent me, and then I'll tell you about another game. This week, I want to talk maybe a little bit more about the matches because they're such intriguing matches. So the first game that a Thousand picked is Juve traveling to the Olimpico to face Lazio. He has Lazio winning 1-0, goal by former Juve striker Immobile. His comment is, Ciro Immobile gives a joy to his city. Of course, Immobile is from Naples. He's going to dedicate this goal to Napoli, all Neapolitans, and to his brother from another mother, Insigne. He's going to say after this result, Sarri is going to be moved and he'll be in tears. And then on Wednesday, Pochettino is going to take care of Juve and hit him one more time. So for our friends in Italy, Thousand Names prediction, Lazio Juventus 1-0, gol di Immobile, Ciro regala una gioia alla sua città, dedica Napoli ai napoletani e al fratello Insigne, Sarri in lacrime e mercoledì ci pensa Pochettino. So very intriguing match. So Juve is going to play before Napoli. This is the noontime match, and it actually the 6 p.m. match in Italy, noon here for us in the United States. I don't agree with Thousand in the sense that both Juve and Lazio played in the Coppa Italia, but I see Lazio, they had to go to extra time, penalty kicks, lost to Milan. I could see how that match is really going to take its toll on them. Lazio played a lot of their starters in that match. I'm going to have this as a draw. Lazio has done well against Juve recently. Simone Inzaghi does well against Allegri, but this is also the time of year that Juve starts peaking. Anyone that's followed Allegri's career knows that really his goal is to get the teams to peak this time of year. So I'm going to have it as a draw, which could still be a very good result for Napoli as well. I'm going to have it 1-1, and I'm going to have it with a goal. Higuain should be back, so I'm going to have him with a goal, and I agree with Thousand, Immobile is going to score against his former team. So the next match, and this is right after Lazio-Juve, we have Napoli playing at home against Roma. So here's a prediction from Thousand Names is 1-0, goal by Insigne. The magnificent Lorenzo brings Napoli to a 7-point lead. He's going to say that now from the Vesuvius, instead of lava, snow is going to come out. They actually had some snow in Naples, which is really incredibly rare. And Napoli's dream of the Scudetto is going to become a reality. So in Italian, Napoli-Roma 1-0 Insigne. Lorenzo il Magnifico porta il Napoli a più 7. Dal Vesuvio esce neve, non lava. Il sogno è realtà. I think Napoli is going to win 2. I'm going to give a goal to Mertens. Also a tribute for those of you on Twitter. If you've seen, Mertens been in the news for what he does for the homeless people in Naples. He goes, he gets pizzas from Naples, the best pizzas in the world probably, in that city and brings them to homeless people. It's been covered in the Italian media. So I think he's going to score. I think they're going to win 1-0. And I have Lazio drawing, so the lead is going to extend, but not as much as Thousand says in my opinion. And the last match that he picked is the Derby della Madonnina, and that's the Sunday night match. Thousand Names has Inter winning 1-0, goal from Icardi. Mauro is going to stick it in Gattuso, is going to end Gattuso's run of good luck. He says that Bonucci is going to be embarrassed in this match. So in Italian, Milan-Inter, 0-1 Icardi, Mauro mette fine al culo di Gattuso, Bonucci ridicolizzato. Now, I'll say in general, in the derby, especially in the one in Milan, I tend to pick the team that goes into the match in less form and struggling. So part of me wants to pick Inter, but I'm going to keep riding Milan. I've picked them either to win or draw for quite some time, even last week. So I'm going to have actually Milan winning. I'm going to have it 2-1 Milan. I'm going to have goals by Suso and Cutrone, and I'm going to give a call to Icardi, who's coming back. So interestingly, today Icardi wasn't selected on Argentina's squad. Maybe it's because he was returning from an injury. So an intriguing wrinkle there. Should be really an exciting derby, especially with Milan's resurgence. So to recap, Fausen and I disagree. He has Lazio beating Juve. I have it as a draw. We both agree Napoli is going to beat Roma. Fausen has Inter beating Milan. I have it the other way. So exciting matches here. I've also been in touch with Fausen after I come back from a vacation, which is coming up soon. We're going to have him live on the podcast making the picks with me. So that'll be a fun wrinkle. So on top of these matches where basically all the top teams are playing each other, another match to watch is Atalanta and Sampdoria. So Sampdoria could be really an intriguing spoiler in all this. They've been playing well recently. Atalanta at home, always a tough team to face. So this should be an intriguing match. So we'll talk about all these games on Monday. I'm very excited to see what the league will look like then. So now let's get to the fantastic Twitter questions. We're going to do a few more than we usually do to make up for Monday. As always, please keep sending them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, this is a fun one to start, piggybacking off of Romelu Lukaku's idea. David, if the Premier League were to have an all-star game, would the other leagues follow suit?
Yeah, I think it's possible. And you got to give credit to the Premier League. In a lot of ways, they're really ahead of the game. The way I think they've handled the TV broadcasting, having all the teams share into it equally, really promoting the game. Here in the United States, the way it's broadcast is really incredible. The difference when you watch a Premier League match compared to others is really quite stunning. Of course, England, the Premier League seems to be the first league that's going to shorten the transfer window, and boy, would I love that development. And it seems in general, other leagues really try to follow suit for the Premier League in that sense. So I'd love to see an all-star game in Italy. I'm not sure what the format would you would do it. North against South in Italy would have quite a lot of implications because there's a lot of a rivalry between North and South. Maybe you could do it Italian players versus foreigners, something along those lines. I think it would be great if Serie A had a, you know, an all-star game, maybe not necessarily have it played in Italy, maybe have it in Dubai or China or here in the U.S., a really great opportunity to promote the league. So that's something I hope happens. If the Premier League does it, I do expect other leagues to do it. And I think Serie A has shown in recent years they're a little bit more looking to the future and marketing. So why not? I could see them doing it as well.
Yeah, who knows? The NBA doesn't even do East versus West anymore. They pick captains, so yeah. You never know.
Yeah, they could actually could do that in Italy too. That would be fun.
Yeah. All right, David, next Twitter question. Which Serie A club must sell this summer?
It's a good question. So here's my rule with this. I'm a big believer that until the status quo changes, I go on the assumption that the status quo is gonna stay. Let me give you an example. I never thought Juve would be able to sign a top Fiorentina player until they did with Bernardeschi. So that's kind of my frame of mind. So to answer this question, I'm going to look at the trends in recent years. So we know that both Inter and Roma have financial fair play issues. Roma was looking to sell Dzeko in January. I think they got a little bit ahead of their financial fair play issues by selling Emerson Palmieri. Maybe now in retrospect doesn't look so great because Kolarov looks like he's running out of gas. Inter is going to have a financial fair play issues. They are going to have to sell some players before they can even start buying. So I could see both those teams losing one or two significant players in the summer. We've seen Juve in recent years, every time they make a big addition, they also have a big sale. So when Dybala came in, Vidal was on his way out, Pogba and Higuain. Last summer, we saw them bring in Bernardeschi. And, you know, we saw Bonucci leave. Now, Juve has also a very expensive option to buy on Douglas Costa. Just keeping him is going to be really expensive. So Juve is looking at course of some free transfers. Emerson will likely come. So let's see if they make a big addition. You know, they'd likely have to make a big sale. It looks like this summer it could be Alexandro. Maybe there's less momentum for Dybala. With Milan, you know, we have uncertainty with the ownership situation. Now, if they make a late run for the Champions League, I think that would certainly help their chances of retaining talent. We've seen Lazio in recent years make some big sales. I think especially if they don't make the Champions League, it would be a certainty that Milinkovic-Savic leaves. And even if they do make it, I do think there's a chance that he goes. So those are my predictions. The other teams below these, if a big offer were to come in for a key player, odds are they would move. Napoli, which we haven't mentioned so far, for them, you know, it's about the Scudetto pack. They were able to retain all their players last summer. I'm not sure if they'll be able to do it moving forward. I could see them losing at least one or two players as well.
Well, now that Alexandro is a left winger, maybe he could come to Chelsea. All right, I'll keep dreaming.
You like that one.
I don't mind it, yeah. All right, David, who would be a better fit in Manchester United's midfield between Milinkovic-Savic and Jorginho? And staying on Jorginho, could the Napoli playmaker join Liverpool?
So we've had this question before on Savic and Jorginho, but I get so many questions on Milinkovic-Savic that I wanted to add it again. And then now there's the wrinkle that Liverpool, there are a lot of reports in England that they're after Jorginho. So I'm not going to be afraid to call a Man United. Damn you, Twitter. I'm going to say it anyways. I think ideally Jorginho, assuming Pogba stays, which I think will be the case, might be of a better fit because I do see a lot of similarities between Milinkovic-Savic and Jorginho. But I will say Milinkovic-Savic has shown that he's quite versatile. He has played in a more defensive position originally. He was moved forward once Kita Balde was gone while Felipe Anderson was hurt. So he is fairly flexible. I don't think it's impossible for him to play next to Pogba. I just think Jorginho would slot in more naturally. Now, he's a Carrick type of player for you, Man U, and I say Man U United fans, kind of similar in that style. As far as Jorginho to Liverpool, I don't have specific information on Liverpool aspect, but it really wouldn't shock me if Jorginho leaves in the summer. Napoli, just because he's 27, he's really now at the peak of his value on the transfer market. Napoli already has Diarra, who would be a great long-term replacement, and they've also been linked to Torreira from Sampdoria. So I could see that move gaining more steam. So it wouldn't shock me to see both these players in the Premier League next season.
All right, David, if every top Italian team could only sign one big name this summer, who would it be? The listener Nathan suggests Lucas Torreira or Leon Bailey for Milan. And Nathan, no, Leon Bailey is going to Chelsea.
I love it. So I like this question. So I made this more of a hypothetical. I was just trying to think, you know, ideally who would be the one player that would really fit with the team. So some of these are more far-fetched than others. Now, Milinkovic-Savic would be absolutely perfect for Juve, would really be the type of midfielder to elevate the team. I see when you become a team like Juve, it becomes a little bit hard to improve because you have a really good squad, but Milinkovic-Savic would be really ideal. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast. I see that this is very unlikely, because of his price tag being sky high, even if Juve sold a big name to finance it. There's a difficult relationship with Lazio. Pretty much all the rich clubs around Europe would love to have Milinkovic-Savic. So I think Juve's chance of signing him may have gone. But again, if they could sign one player, that would be the one that I think they should go after. for Milan, one player that I would love to see, and this I think is much more realistic than Milinkovic-Savic at Juve, would be Kita Balde, who I've loved at Lazio. I think Milan, very intriguing squad right now. They just missed that one winger offensively. I think Kita Balde is an incredible talent. I've said it before. Wouldn't shock me if he gets to Dybala's level at some point. Milan has been linked to him in the past. Another player that I think would look great on Milan, I agree with Nathan, is Torreira. He would be a midfielder. He would slot in really well with Frank Kessié, in my opinion. For Inter, I'd love for them, I think would make a lot of sense to bring in Arturo Vidal. I think, too, Inter would love to stick it to Juve by bringing him back to Serie A. They have been linked to him in the past. You know, granted, he's 30, and I think he's an old 30, but I think with Spalletti, I could see Spalletti really using him the way he did at Nainggolan. I think Vidal in a more advanced role at Inter would be really tremendous. I think he'd be a great fit on that team. And for Napoli, we've talked about it a lot on the podcast. I'd love for them getting a great keeper, like someone like Donnarumma or Handanovic. Like, those names aren't realistic for them, but I've always wondered what Napoli would look with a keeper of that caliber. But I think for Napoli, more importantly than bringing in new players, is keeping as much of the talent as they have on the team right now.
All right, next Twitter question. Is the young Argentine Lautaro Martinez coming to Inter to replace Icardi?
So, yeah, we had a fantastic interview on Monday, if you missed it, with our friend from Scouted Football. So Lautaro Martinez is that Argentinian striker. He scored a hat-trick in his debut match in the Copa Libertadores. Really, really intriguing player. Now, when he's asked by the press, is he going to Inter, and Di Marzio and others have reported the deal's done, he's going to Inter, he signed the contract, he'll be there in July. Every time Lautaro Martinez is asked about it, he's very coy about it. But I think these are just phrases of circumstances. You know, imagine if you're a Racing fan, his current club, you hear him talking about leaving right when they're playing in their biggest competition. Interestingly, Martinez's father has actually said the opposite, that he's going in there. So he's going there. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. Now, the question is he going there to replace Sicardi? I don't think it's a given, because if you think about it, Inter had invested a lot in Gabigol, and they invested even more than what they're spending to get Lautaro Martinez to get Gabigol. And just because Gabigol came didn't mean that Icardi left. They were both on the team together. But I've said it a few times, I do think this could be the year that Icardi leaves if Inter doesn't make the CL. So aside from that, I'm very intrigued to see Martinez in Serie A. We've seen the highlights. Everyone that's watched him is really high on him. So a big coup for them. I think this makes up a little bit for the disappointment of not getting Pastore in January.
Can't go wrong at least taking a gamble on a young Argentinian offensive player who also is about the same height as Aguero, so you never know. All right. Why would Milan go for Pepe Reina as a potential replacement for Donnarumma?
So there was a recent report from Carlo Laudisia from Gazzetta dello Sport. I think it was on Monday. He said that if Donnarumma leaves, Milan's going to replace him with Pepe Reina, whose contract with Napoli is expiring. It doesn't. His agent has said he won't be extending that contract. And again, today, Raiola made another statement on Donnarumma, that Gigio, you know, showed his affection for Milan, but that if they were up to him, he would have already left Milan, and there's plenty of suitors for him. So the soap opera is going to continue with that. Now, interestingly, I saw on Twitter some Milan fans, you know, they kind of played the telephone game with this Pepe Reina thing, and it turned into Pepe Reina's coming to Milan to be Donnarumma's backup. I don't see that, because to be honest, if Pepe Reina was going to be a backup, why would he leave Napoli? Napoli wants a younger keeper. What's the difference if you're going to be a backup? If you're going to do it at Milan with Donnarumma, very established keeper, you'll barely play. At Napoli with a new keeper, they're a groom. It makes more sense to me. I just don't see why he would do it to go as a backup. Also, salary-wise, would be very expensive for Milan. Keep in mind, Donnarumma earns $6 million after taxes. Even as a backup, Pepe Reina would command at least $2 million. Then there's Donnarumma's brother making $1 million. That's a lot of money. But so aside from that, if Pepe Reina comes, I would imagine that would be as a starter. In the past, Di Marzio has linked Rina to Milan. So we know that that would work. And look, you know, obviously a big drop off from Donnarumma to Piperina. I've always said it. I think he's a liability for Napoli, but he would bring a lot of leadership. And if you're an older Milan fan, you also remember that Milan has won a lot of trophies with even worse keepers than Piperina. They're just not a club that historically has valued the keeper position that much. So not impossible. And keep in mind, Milan has a great young keeper named Plizzari, who I think Piperina could groom. So that's what I think the situation is with this. I wouldn't be surprised if it gains steam in recent weeks.
All right, next question. This is a cool one. Who's the most likely current young Milan player to get to 300 caps at the club?
Great question. So Donnarumma's off to a good start, but I think as long as Raiola's there with managing him, there's always going to be the possibility that he leaves. So if we count Romagnoli, maybe he could be the one. Man, he's been incredible this season. I've been so impressed with him. But aside from Romagnoli, maybe Cutrone, really off to a fantastic start. So I'm going to say those two. Milan really has a lot of intriguing young Italian players. They might actually replace Juve as the club that really feeds the Azzurri for the next cycle.
I like Romagnoli as well. All right, next question. Was Di Francesco let down by his own players, or is he not able to get the most of them?
Good question. So, you know, one thing that I've learned this season is, like, you know, we cover Serie A. We chat about it twice a week. We do a podcast. So we talk a lot about it. And I really go out of my way trying not to be a prisoner at the moment. But it becomes really hard when you're talking about small sample size and trends every week. Now, from the get-go, I wasn't that impressed with Roma hiring of Di Francesco. He had done pretty well at Sassuolo, but I had my concerns. He really surprised me, and up until December, I almost thought you could make a case for him being one of the managers of the season in Serie A, but now the team has really fallen apart. He hasn't been helped from his veterans. Now, we've seen Nainggolan fall off a cliff. Even Kevin Strootman's been really, really poor this season. De Rossi looks almost done. So Florenzi hasn't had a great season for his standards. So I think it's more the players, to be honest, than Di Francesco. But I do think now that we're seeing not just me, why so many people were concerned with Roma hiring him. I think another string of poor results, he could be on his way out there. Be interesting to see what Roma would do with their new manager, because Di Francesco really wasn't much of a monkey hire. It was more of Baldini. You know, he used to work with Spurs, who's been a consultant for Palotta. He really pushed for Di Francesco. So I'd be really curious to see in what direction Monchi would go if they sacked Di Francesco.
All right. We got an Italian national team question. Should they just wait for Antonio Conte, or should they pick a new manager sooner?
Great question. So Costa Curta, who's kind of acting as team manager for the Azzurri, we don't have a president for the Italian Federation right now, but he's kind of been the spokesperson for Italy. And this week, the interim manager, Di Biagio, had a retreat at Coverciano, where the Azzurri have their training facility. So Costa Curta said that ultimately there's only really three people in the running. Mancini, Conte, and Di Biagio could potentially get the job full time. Now for Conte, I still think, you know, especially because if he comes back now, it's not like there's a World Cup in 2 years. He would have to go through another Euro. Would Conte really want to do that or stick around for 4 years? He's such a young manager. I still think odds are Conte is going to go for a club team. I don't think the Azzurri should wait around too long. I still think at the end of the day, I'd be surprised if it's not Mancini who gets the job afterwards. I really hope it's not Di Biagio. I've been not impressed with him with the under 21, but maybe he'll really surprise me. You know, Italy won a World Cup in 82 with Berzot. He had a profile very similar to Di Biagio, someone that worked with the Federation. So it's not like it has to be a big name manager on the Azzurri, but I think it's going to be Mancini, and I wouldn't wait around for Conte too long just because I have a feeling he'll be going to a club.
All right, next Twitter question. Should Gigi Buffon plan Italy's upcoming friendlies against England and Argentina, or is it time to move on and give experience to Donnarumma and Perrin?
So there's been a lot of outrage this week over the fact that Di Biagio, Italy's interim manager, said that Buffon is going to be selected, that he talked to him and that he'll be playing some matches for the Azzurri. So there was a lot of outrage, say, oh, it's time to move on. I think the storyline that Buffon's totally done as a keeper is exaggerated. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast. Yeah, sure, he's made mistakes. I can't say that that's definitely because of age. Look, even Donnarumma, young keepers make mistakes. So let's think about it this way. Had Italy qualified for the World Cup, Buffon would be playing in these upcoming friendlies. I really think the fact that Italy was shocking eliminated by Sweden really changed a lot of plans for Buffon. I think he thought, you know what, the World Cup in Russia is the perfect way to end my career. I think it would be his sixth World Cup. That would be a perfect ending to his career. But because that didn't happen, it's changing a lot of his plans. So now he's talking about continuing with that. I think, you know, because these are just friendlies, Italy doesn't even have their long-term manager in the fall now. I don't think it's the end of the world if Buffon plays these matches. I do think a player of his caliber, I could see the argument that he deserves that match against Sweden not be his final moment with the Azzurri. And I get to, yeah, it's time to give an opportunity to a younger keeper. But again, we don't even have the full-time manager for the Azzurri. These are friendlies he would have played anyway had Italy made the World Cup. So I don't think it's a big deal if we wait a couple of matches to pass the torch. But I will say this, if he stays beyond these friendlies and once we get to the qualifiers for the Euro, then yeah, that's a problem and it's time to move on. But I think Buffon has earned the right for those Sweden matches, not to be his farewell. I just don't think it makes that much of an impact long term if he plays in a friendly or two.
I'm going to make a quick NFL analogy here.
Go for it.
All right. Well, so Gigi is 40 years old, passionate, and still very good. Tom Brady, 40 years old, and the MVP of the league. You try telling Tom Brady when the Patriots are up 40-0 to let the backup quarterback in the game to get some experience. There's no way he's coming out. So a lot of
that's why Garoppolo's gone probably too, right?
You got it. Brady calls the shots. It doesn't matter if he's 40 or 50. He's playing. So go on, Buffon. Go on. All right. Staying on Gigi. David, was Dino Zoff better than Buffon?
So this was a great question. So this week was the birthday of Dino Zoff. And look, I'm old. I'm 40. Dino Zoff was the keeper when Italy won the World Cup in 1982. I was 5 years old when that happened. Have very vague memories of him as a player. He retired shortly after. I started really following calcio, you know, more intensely once he retired. But, you know, obviously I read a lot, knew a lot about him. I'll just tell you, when I was a kid, the idea that there would be a keeper better than Zoff or even comparable to him based on the legend and everything that I had read about him seemed completely impossible to me. Now, of course, then Buffon came along and there's other great keepers now. So the reason I tell this story is I've talked about it on the podcast. I used to hate the saying when people are like, oh, this guy's the best player ever. If it's a player that I didn't watch or didn't know much about, it's hard for me to judge. And I used to say, instead of saying that, let's just say best I ever saw. But even that to me is flawed because my perceptions of players really change with age. Again, I never thought there would be someone better than Zoff. And here we are, Buffon. Most people would say is the greatest keeper ever. So I'm going to say that I think we should really get into the habit of just saying best player in recent memory because things change a lot. And it might be shocking, but in 10, 20 years, some of you younger guys, when they'll be the player of the moment and people will say, oh, this guy's the best player ever, you'll be like, oh, well, what about Messi? So you'll know how I feel. So that's why I also wanted to put this question to give this old man rant to you young guys.
Well said. All right, here's our last football question. David, had Nesta stayed healthy, would he be ranked higher when we discuss the best defenders ever?
Good question. Now, Nesta, obviously fantastic player at his peak when he was healthy, was probably one of the best defenders that I saw. I'm still going to say Franco Baresi, who played for Milan's, the one that I watched that I think is the best. But Nesta certainly up there. But I do think players that are injured, and Nesta unfortunately had a lot of injuries in his career, barely contributed to the World Cup in 2006. I think it can work both ways. I think, too, it's very easy to get caught up into the what if. And, you know, and maybe we project a little bit what Nesta could have been had he stayed healthy. And look, had he stayed healthy, I'm confident he would have been a great player, but he wasn't. And our friend Ben Golliver, who we've had on the podcast a few times that talks about the NBA, has this great saying that sometimes availability is the best ability. And I think it's very important, a player that's reliable, that can play a lot, that has to be part of the legacy as well. So I'm not taking anything away from Nesta, but I think maybe the injury, we should maybe also in a way hold that against him, because again, availability is also a very important ability.
I like that quote. I don't think Derrick Rose would like that quote, but that's a good one. All right, David, here's the last Twitter question. The Academy Awards are on Sunday. So here you go. You get the opportunity to make your final Oscar picks for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Actress.
Awesome. So thank you all that have listened to our episode with Andrew Barker. I got great feedback where we got really into the nitty gritty of the Oscars. So we made some picks there, but you know, this week I've been reading a lot. I've rewatched some of the movies. So for those of you gambling or just you guys really into Oscars, I kind of wanted to share some insight for you on the major awards. So for Best Picture, I'm still going to go with Shape of Water. I think they are the clear front runner. At this point, there's some momentum for Three Billboards, but I don't see it. Not out of the question that Get Out makes a very late push. You know, what's interesting is the way they vote for Best Picture. They rank all the movies. There's 9 nominees. So sometimes you got to also ask yourself, it's not necessarily the movie that most people pick at number one. I could imagine most people are going to have Shape of Water in the top 3. And I think that's going to put them over the top. But it's not out of the question that so many people put Get Out number one, and there's more younger voters in the Academy, that maybe there'd be a big upset. But I'm still going to go with Shape of Water. For Best Director, I'm with our friend Andrew Del Toro, who's the director of Shape of Water, hasn't won an Academy Award. I'd be shocked if he didn't. I wouldn't mind seeing Jordan Peele from Get Out winning it. You know, I have to say that movie, I thought people like Andrew and all these great movie critics were kind of doing a circle jerk on this movie, maybe giving it more credit than it deserved. But after the podcast with Andrew and some other things, I rewatched it. That movie's really brilliant, but I don't think Jordan Peele is going to be able to beat Del Toro. For Best Actor, I'm with Andrew. There's hardly impossible that Gary Oldman isn't going to win this award. I really like the young actor from Call Me By Your Name. I think, you know, he's someone that we'll see in future years. I think his name is Timothée Chalamet, but Gary Oldman's going to win this. I think that's the biggest lock. For Best Actress, Frances McDormand is the clear favorite, but I also really like Sally Hawkins in Shape of Water. So to recap, I have Shape of Water, Best Movie, Best Director Del Toro, Gary Oldman, Best Actor, and Frances McDormand. So it should be very exciting Oscars on Sunday night. If you're into the movies and you haven't checked out the podcast with Andrew that we posted on Saturday, I think you'll enjoy it. So now let's get into the interview part of the podcast. And we're going to be joined by our good friend Claudio Perfetto from Di Marzio's site. So I want to thank you all you guys for sending in questions. As a reminder, please support the podcast. If you're listening to us on iTunes, it takes literally 3 seconds. You can do it right now. Leave us a 5-star review. If you want to leave us a comment, we always read it. If you're on Android and you're listening to us on SoundCloud, please follow us there. That helps us. We are looking to get on to more platforms as well. So as always, thank you for your support. Excellent. And I'm very excited to be joined by my colleague from Di Marzio's site, Claudio Perfetto. He's been doing a great job, really growing, doing a lot of cool projects. So on top of Di Marzio's site, you can read his articles on CS Sports Football. He's a contributor to SempreMilan.com. And he also started a podcast, which I'm very excited to hear more about. We're going to chat about it at the end of the podcast. It's called The Idiot and Expert Pod. I think after the interview today, you'll figure out which one of these two roles Claudio has, or maybe not. So I'm very excited to see you grow, Claudio, so much. So thank you so much for joining us on Calcio Land this evening.
Yes, thanks, David. I'm always glad to come on Couch O' Land. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so anytime I'm asked to come on, it's quite an honor. So thanks for having me again.
Awesome. So what I figured we'd do tonight, my friend, is chat a little bit about Milan, and then I want to get your thoughts on the main storylines in Serie A. So let me take you back to the time when Milan appointed Gattuso. I'm going to be honest, he proved me really, really wrong. I even wrote a column on he was going to be another disposable hero. It wasn't going to work out. Absolutely proved me wrong. I'm very happy to see that he did. But give me, what did you expect when Gattuso came on board? Were you also pessimistic? What did you think he was going to do with the team?
So I would love to say that I thought he was going to be great, but that obviously it wasn't the case. I thought that he would make the players play hard. You know, he would get a lot out of them as, in terms of energy and effort, but that doesn't always translate into results. The one thing that I thought would be good is I saw him coach the Primavera a little bit, and I felt like he would go back to a four-man defense, which I thought would be beneficial to the team. But, you know, you still have Inzaghi and Seedorf and Brocchi and those experiences in your mind. So it could have very well went that way. And it still might. I mean, it's only been, you know, 13 games unbeaten, but overall it's been about 18 games. So you never know what could happen. But it's been a pleasant surprise for sure, you know, especially because you thought the season was lost when he was appointed. And, you know, he has turned it around. So I wasn't really optimistic. But, you know, I thought he could maybe steady the ship and at least win some games, but nothing to this level for sure.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the switch to the four-man defense, which has really improved. Tell me what other noticeable changes you've noticed. And the team has really peaked more in the past month or so. So tell me what else has stood out to you in general about the way the team plays.
Yeah, so on the Montella and the three-man defense, even when he started Gattuso, if you watch them play, they were very slow, lethargic. It was like the three-man defense was just knocking the ball back and forth between each other, and then they would try to go up the wing, and then that would get cut off, and they would kind of just reverse it back and go the other way, and it just there was like no movement. They were very predictable. So the things that he's changed, it's very, very unpredictable now. It's much quicker, more direct. You see the fullbacks, they both move forward. You know, even Montella last year when they played with the four-man defense, you would kind of notice that one fullback would be the defensive guy who would stay behind and the other one would press and be more attacking. You know, with Gattuso, it's more unpredictable. Sometimes Rodriguez goes forward, sometimes Calabria goes forward. Bonaventura and Kessié both get into the box, so they're going box to box, which is very great, and it helps, you know, the offensive movement a ton. So those are the things that I think, you know, are much better now, pretty much the pace and just the unpredictability of it all.
Excellent point. I totally agree with you on the athletic condition of the team, and that was something that Gattuso said he was really working on, and that I think that has made a big difference. So I'm glad you pointed that out. So tell me, you know, there's been some players who clearly have improved a lot. Bonaventura is the most obvious in a lot of ways, I would say, but there are more. So tell me which players specifically you think have benefited the most from Gattuso's arrival.
Yeah, so Bonucci is an obvious one. You know, he looks to be back to his top level, which is great. But the ones that really stand out to me are Calabria, first of all. I mean, he's been magnificent. You know, with the Milan fullbacks, you know, you've had him come up, you've had DiCirlio come up, and they kind of plateau a little bit. You know, they seem like very good players, but then they become maybe average players. They don't really develop further. But Calabria this year on the Gattuso has really, really developed even further. He's just so quick up and down the flank. His positioning is great, you know, especially defensively, but he does get forward, and his crossing has been great. He just seems like he has a lot of confidence on the under Gattuso, and that's translating into performances. And then the other guy is Çalhanoğlu. You know, he was pretty much lost on the Montella. He barely was playing. You know, he was kind of like an Andre Silva role where he would play against lesser competition, maybe in the Europa League when other people needed a breather. And now, you know, he's really come into his own. I think he could still get better. You know, honestly, watching the Coppa Italia semifinal yesterday, I think he has to decide better when he's going to shoot or pass, because he goes for the shot a lot, but he just has a lot of confidence. He tracks back, he's winning the ball back, and he's making some very good plays. So those are two players that stand out to me, and then Bonucci and Bilia, I think, are getting back to their best, which is good to see.
Yeah, that's a great list, and it's a long one, which is really a big credit to Gattuso there. So last question on Milan. Of course, we have the derby coming, which is really exciting. We have the Arsenal match looming. I mean, what a turnaround for Milan. So tell me, what do you expect in the derby and for the rest of the season with the Rossoneri?
The derby is always unpredictable, so it's hard to say, you know, who will win. I think, obviously, if you go by form, Milan is miles ahead of Inter right now. It's such an important match. You know, Inter probably would be content with the draw just to keep Milan far behind them in the standings. But, you know, if you take into account the players, I really believe that Milan does have the better players at this point. But Inter has Icardi, who could be the best player between the teams, you know, so they always have that, and he could cause them problems. So I'm just looking for another good performance. You know, that would be the most important thing, but it's very unpredictable. So I actually kind of feel like it'll be a draw. And then as far as the rest of the season, I would be happy if they stayed this competitive and at this level for the rest of the season, because it's easy to do this for a few games like they've done now. But, you know, if you go back to the beginning of the season, everyone thought Spalletti had Inter turned around, and look what happened. And DeFrancesco and Roma were playing well, and look what happened. So I would think it would be a positive if Milan, even if they don't make the Champions League spots, if they could just continue this towards the end of the season and show that they're for real and very consistent under Gattuso.
I completely agree with that assessment. That's very well said. We've seen a lot of streaks in Serie A. And look, I wish the best to Gattuso. This time last year, we were saying a lot of similar things on Pioli at Inter. I mean, I do think Gattuso has more staying power for a lot of reasons. But it's interesting that you say that we have to watch for these streaks. So now let's move away from Milan and more the league in general. We have a fantastic title race. You know, Juve 4 points behind with one game to make up. So tell me, what's your assessment of the race, and how much of a factor do you think it will be for Juve this upcoming match against Spurs? How much of an impact do you think it would have on the league if they were eliminated next week?
Like you said, it's a great race, and it's a great time for it because all of the other major leagues are pretty much decided already. So it gives people a reason to watch Serie A, which is great for the league. Both teams are at an amazing level. You know, Napoli hasn't slowed down one bit. They stumbled a little bit after the last loss to Juve, but they got right back on track and took over the top spot again. Juve, obviously, once they figured out the defensive issues, they've been pretty much unstoppable in the league. So it's going to come down to the wire. And I think that game on April 22nd at Juventus Stadium is really going to be the decider. I think whoever comes out of that ahead probably won't lose their advantage going forward towards the end of the season. But and then as far as Juventus, it's going to be huge. I mean, if they go out to Tottenham, you think about it, they really risk not winning a trophy this season, which would be insane, you know, because they lost to Lazio in the Supercoppa. They could lose to Milan in the Coppa Italia final. They could lose the Scudetto to Napoli. And then if they go out in the Champions League, they're done. So that would be something else. You know, who would have thought that in the beginning of the season? So if they do go out to Tottenham, you have to believe that their motivation is going to be in that Scudetto race. Even if it wasn't before, it definitely will be now. You know, I don't think they'll take it for granted, and they'll be very, very tough to stop just because of their depth and strength.
Very interesting. And I'm with you. Very exciting for Serie A that they're kind of the only show in town when it comes to the title race rest of the way. So now beyond the Scudetto race, we also have an intriguing challenge for the Champions League spot. Obviously, Juve and Napoli at this point are locks for that. But we have Roma, Inter, Lazio, and now Milan making a late run for those last two Champions League. So out of these four teams, which two would you expect to make it to the Champions League next season?
I think it's going to be Lazio and Roma. Milan is, you know, the flavor of the week. They're the informed team, but they have to pass two of these teams and Sampdoria when you really think of it. So they have too many teams to pass. They would really need to go unbeaten. This week is going to be huge, as you know, Lazio plays Juventus, and Roma plays Napoli, and Milan and Inter face off against each other. So this is going to be a huge weekend, but I just think they left themselves too far behind. And, you know, Lazio is playing better again now, you know, even though they went out to Milan on penalties in the Coppa Italia, they have been playing better, and they're such a strong, talented team. Roma also, you know, they've been playing better with Under. You know, he's been in great form, and I just think they're very talented. So I expect those two teams from Rome to get those last two spots. And Inter is falling off. I don't think that they'll be able to keep up towards the rest of the season.
Interesting perspective on that. So I would really enjoyed this interview. So now let's talk about your own podcast, which you started. So the title is an Idiot and an Expert. Based on your excellent answers today, I have a pretty good idea about which role you cover in that, but I don't know your co-host, so you never know. Maybe he's going to really surprise me and it's the other way around. So I know you guys posted the first episode. I'm looking forward to hearing it. You and I had chatted a little bit offline on what you're doing with it, and I'm very excited with the concept. So tell my listeners what they can expect if they tune into your podcast.
Yeah, so I put expert in quotes, you know, when speaking to myself about myself, because I don't really consider myself an expert, but I guess I know more than my co-host about the sport, so that's why I'm considered that. As far as the podcast itself, it's going to be more geared towards the casual fan, maybe the novice fan who doesn't really know a tremendous amount about the sport. And it's going to be a lot of comparisons to American sports like NBA, NHL, NFL, MLB, comparing LeBron to Messi. You don't really see that too much in America. You know, you have cross-sport comparisons such as Brady versus, you know, Jordan, and LeBron versus all different types of players from other leagues. But you never really hear about them being compared to football or soccer players. So that's pretty much where we're going to go with it. You could follow it at Idiot Expert Pod. The episode is up there. And, you know, any criticism is welcome from anybody listening. You know, it's much appreciated. And we're just trying to do something different, a little more laid back for people in, you know, America or any other country trying to get into the beautiful game.
Awesome. I really like the concept, and I think there'll be a big demand for it. So listen, on top of the podcast, I think you guys should all check out Claudio's work. We've been working together for a while. He always does a fantastic job. So, you know, support his work, and I think it'll definitely be worth your time. So, Claudio, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's always a pleasure to have you on Calcioland.
Thank you, David. Thanks, Alex. I look forward to listening to you guys in the future. Keep up the good work yourselves. Thanks.